Even when we're doing the aspiration prayers, we think of them as like singing. And in the West, we haven't developed the kind of tunes that developed in India and Tibet. So when we're doing the prayers, it has kind of a plain chant quality to it, right? But actually, they always have like a tune to them. So some teachers, and I for a while had people do everything in Tibetan. But then people don't get the meaning, and the meaning is important. So at some point, actually, all the prayers we do need to have a certain kind of tune. But we still consider that we're singing. As our choir director, Michael Hatfield, has explained many times that the singing, the mantra, is a very profound practice and very necessary practice. We can't do sitting meditation all the time. We can't sit still all the time. We're moving. And we can't consciously be trying to be mindful all the time in the sense that we're tracking our experience all the time. But we are continually rhythmic, and we have a tone, a vibration that's going on constantly. So, in a sense, we are doing, our body, speech, and mind are doing mantra all the time. We're singing all the time. So, I've joked that the practice at Lion's Roar is singing and sitting. Keep it simple, right? So when we're doing the prayers, we want to think of them as we're singing, we're connecting with our inner tone, the seed tone in Sanskrit called bija, seed. As a seed tone, everyone has a tone, right? So one of my teachers, my main teacher explained meditation as attunement. Getting in tune, attunement. Isn't that nice? Yeah, attunement, you know. So it's not figuring something out or, you know, just drilling down into something. It's you know, a tune-up, attunement like that. Okay, so let's start. I need Dana to come up the front here. There. Dana's helping me to do the meditation booklets. They all have the title of Loving Embodied Presence. So we're going to do a series of four, aren't we? First one is how to get your blank on the cushion. Second one, how to deal with traumatic situations, you know. And third, like how to deal with distractions and like addictions, like that. And fourth is how to have fun. So I need to keep, Dana needs to stay cool and healthy. So you can ask Dana, how's it going? How are the booklets going? Yeah, it's good. When at the monastery, when teachers call out students, it's because they love them. It isn't because they're giving them a hard time. You should know that, right? So sometimes in Asia, you know, you're given a little bit on the spot or a little bit of zing, but teachers never do that if they don't know, you know, if you don't count or they don't like you. It's only if they like you to do that. It might feel like I wish I would just fall into a hole in the ground right now, but that's That's what they do. It's kind of like, it kind of works with how I grew up in New York, you know, kind of a little bit like, you know, maybe a little bit, you'd get teased or someone give you a hard time if they like you, you know, like that, so. Yeah, a mixed blessing, right, yeah. That. So this past year, particularly, I've been focusing on Bodhisattva path. Bodhisattva is awakened being path. Most people know the term, but not really what Bodhisattva is. So one of the main teachings I'm giving this year is on the Flower Ornament Sutra, the Lotus Flower Sutra. It's called short Lotus Sutra. So the Lotus Sutra goes into detail and deep imaginative detail about the Bodhisattva path. It's highly enthusiastic. It's rah-rah. It's evangelistic in that sense. So it's an absolutely necessary part of our practice to build up this level of enthusiasm and creativity and imagination when doing the Bodhisattva practice, because without that, we won't have the juice to continue. But I'm going to go into detail about one aspect of the Bodhisattva practice today. I'm getting over a little bit of a cold, and that's why I'm clearing my throat. Also, living in Sacramento, I have continual allergies. Does anybody else have that? So, I've been told that I'm always clearing my throat. Is that true? Lots of times, right? Because I just, it's just like, it feels, a lot of the time it feels just like sandpaper. I have to go to the coast to feel better. But I like Sacramento. We're here, right? Bodhisattva practices are talked about from three aspects. The aspect of the shepherd, the aspect of the ferryman, the aspect of the emperor, empress. So the shepherd Bodhisattva style is we're the last to be free. We, like the shepherd, we want to make sure the everyone else goes first. That we kind of, the shepherd pushes, we're not really sheep, but that's it. We pushes the sheep ahead, goes ahead. The shepherd is behind watching, is the last one. And tending also, if people you know, get lost, go astray. It's a little bit like biblical style, you know, like shepherd will stop and just go find someone that's gone astray, drop whatever he or she's doing, shepherd style. Everyone else gets to be free, gets to be Buddha first. My teacher explained it as letting someone else go before you. You could try that practice, just waiting in line. Isn't it nice sometimes when, you know, you're just in line at the market and somebody maybe, they have just a few items and they say, oh, you go ahead. Doesn't it just light up? I mean, makes the day, yeah. Isn't it nice in traffic where someone's in a rush and we can just say, oh, wow, just go ahead. You know, like they're behind us, like tailgating, like 1 foot behind. And and instead of kind of being a jerk and slowing down, which I like doing, okay. I can do this, I'll slow down, you know. But no, instead, you know. So we pull over. Yeah. So go, you know. It was like, or just when someone's like terribly weaving in and out of traffic, you know, like, wow, you, this must be important. You know, you're not just a jerk. Maybe you really are trying to get somewhere, and you will save the world when you get there, you know, 30 seconds sooner. You know, and I'll say hi to you when we meet at the, you know, the toll bridge going over the Bay Bridge. Have you ever done that? I have done that. I have seen someone zip by me, and then, and it's not like, I used to go to the San Francisco a lot when my daughter lived in San Francisco, and there's that person right there, you know, like, you know, and you're kind of like, and isn't it weird, like, when you, like, when you start looking at somebody, they kind of know you're looking at them? Have you ever had that experience in the car? Like, you know, you just kind of like that, you know. So, so, yeah. I mean, just letting that other person go first. That's like Fairman. Then Fairman style is, you know, the metaphor, the Buddha and the Dharma is like a raft and take you across the ocean. Samsara. So the captain or ferryman, ferry person is going along with everyone. We're on the same, we're in, literally in the same boat, style bodhisattva practice. We're doing. So an example of that is the practice here, we're doing the same practice the Dalai Lama is doing. They're not, there's not, we're not doing separate practices. There's not like a special practice. So, of course, in our tradition, you know, we have practice leaders, we have monks, nuns, lamas, rinpoches, so forth, but everyone's doing the same practice. If you take the proper teachings, the proper empowerments, make the proper pledges, everyone can do the practice. So that's really good to know. So we're all doing the same thing. Then the royal, you know, side is first, you know, we need to become realized, we need to be Buddha to help other beings. So we need to gather all the energy so that we're giving correct teaching, so that we have all the skills. So we're working very hard, so right away we're doing everything possible to help. We're gaining all the knowledges and skills and skillful means. So there are those three, you know, the imperial style, the fairy style, and the shepherd style, like that. Generally, in our tradition, the shepherd style is seen as the superior. May everyone else go first. Because when you let everyone else go first, then it actually is ironic, but then you go faster too. However, in practical things, we need all three, and we're doing all three at the same time. We're doing the same practice. Everyone here, we're breathing the same air in Sacramento, so we're doing the same practice. We are doing the same formal practices, and we're all helping each other out. And we all, everyone here, has some special knowledge that is maybe superior, has been more developed than others. Right? Everyone here has a particular expertise that they've developed more. So we're doing all three at the same time, but the basic bodhisattva motivation is, you know, may all beings be happy, and me too, but I'm looking out for even someone who I don't like. I'm letting somebody go forward in the line at, you know, the co-op or something. No, you go ahead. So these three practices, there's a prayer that goes with that, so maybe next time we print up prayer book, you know, we can have those three styles. In each given situation, we should be aware, like, am I doing the you know, royal style? Am I doing the fairy style or the boat style or doing the shepherd style? Thich Nhat Hanh has a very famous poem, "Please Call Me By My True Names." Do people know that one? I am, you know, I am the pirate. So that's very much together, right? Style, same. I'm the same as you, right? Do people know that poem a little bit? Maybe we could read it sometime. I had the good karma to hear Thich Nhat Hanh give that poem at Green Gulch Farm. I don't know, like maybe 25 years ago, something like that. So that's the example of I'm doing the same practice you are. I'm in the same boat. I have the same problems. I'm the same jerk, you know. I am the jerk that cuts people off in traffic and then you end up seeing the toll gate, you know. I'm the jerk that butted in line, you know, like that. Same. Along with these three aspects, I'm being a little bit into numbers today, right? So it's called the three excellences, which is the foundation of bodhisattva practice from the standpoint of practice and daily life. The first one is, of course, developing the bodhicitta, the spirit of awakening. We want the aspiration and the enthusiasm, which is really brought forward in doing the meditations on wanting to save all beings who've been our mothers, wanting to help all people. We can't bear that others are suffering, wanting to help our children and friends and loved ones. So that's the level of aspiration and inspiration. The second is the what's called the pure view. This is a Vajrayana sense. Pure view is particularly important, and also in Lotus Sutra, we actually see all beings as Buddhas, and we see Sacramento as Shambhala, the Pure Land. That's a little bit more difficult, right? I think. not only does the person cut us off in traffic and racing around in a really neat sports car, we wish that they get there, but we also see it from pure view. That's a very difficult practice, you know, it is. So when doing pure view, it's easier when we practice pure view, which is why we do all the visualizations where we have beautiful temple and beautiful visualizations for doing the different yogas. So we begin by understanding that things are pure from the very beginning, that we don't have to alter anything, but we need reminders of that, so we have this. Ultimately, we can see even pure view with very difficult people, including ourselves, right? Who's the most difficult person? It's always us, right? Yeah. So pure view in the Vajrayana starts with us, you know, is fundamentally Guru Yoga, in Tibetan Lama Naljor. So we see our teacher's Buddha qualities as being paramount. There's a famous saying, if you see your teacher as Buddha, you'll get the blessings of Buddha. If you see your teacher as Bodhisattva, you'll get the blessings of Bodhisattva. If you see your teacher as ordinary being, you don't get anything. Guru Yoga is very difficult. We had a meeting, a small meeting, not everyone was there, but of practice leaders in the Sangha here, and I said basically the model for Lion's Roar has been very much tantric and very much on the level of Guru Yoga, which is just like, okay, here's the practice. You know, I'd meet with people individually and I'd say, well, here's the practice you need to do. You know, just do this and tell me what happens. That takes one-on-one, right? And people having the courage to report back their experience. This is how it was in India mostly. Very strong Guru Yoga started there in India, and this is the way I learned from my own teacher. I'd already done the academic study when I met him, so I kind of had that out of the way. So it's just like, it's basically just do everything I tell you to do. I should say with Guru Yoga, you can complain. It's okay to complain a little bit. That helps, doesn't it? A little bit, like, well, okay, I'll do it, but I don't like it, but I'll do it. You know, you can say that. That's okay. So, as the Sangha here has grown, the temple grown, we also need structure, right? So here's a course of study, and some people have already online completed the foundations course of Geshe Tashi in London. It's really incredible, and some people are doing that now. So that's one way where we have a structured study, but we're going to put together a whole structured situation here. So that was the nature of the meeting. So if someone walks on the door and says, I want to be Buddha, we'd say, okay, great, here's the program. But it's still, in Vajrayana tradition, still comes down to training for daily life, which means things are spontaneous, and we don't really know what's going to happen, do we? We don't. So the fundamental aspect of Guru Yoga is the spontaneous present awareness of the now. That is it, right? So this is where, like, as people who've done some study know, Dzogchen and Mahamudra and the Guru Yoga come together as one. It is all about, can you present or be present in the moment as the moment is constantly changing? The moments don't come predictable. There's no flag that says, no, I'm coming, you know. So that still will always be the fundamental nature of practice. So as some people who have practiced with other teachers know, we are doing you know, to a tantric mahasiddha practice here. Because of the nature of my lineage and my teacher, which I really love, I do maintain the basic five precepts and many more precepts which conform to conventional reality. But as those people who study with me know, one way which I can teach Dzogchen is through not always being predictable. Isn't that so? So, but we need a blend of predictability and spontaneity. That's the true middle way. So we will have Lam Rim courses, stages of the path courses. We will maybe have 4 or 5 year program along with the Guru Yoga, which is work with people that you didn't think you'd ever work with. Do things that the Lama spontaneously asks you to do. Do something completely opposite, right? We will still do that, right? You'll still say, but Lamala, that's not part of the program. Where is that in the syllables, you know? The name of the temple is Dona Darge. Do in Tibetan means sutra. Sutra is generally that external public teachings of the Buddha, which tend to go along in a graded path. And Tantra is the inner experience, realization of the Buddhas, and which is always always present, always fresh, always spontaneous, and completely non-conceptual. Can those go together? Yes, they can go together. Does it always feel great? No, it does not always feel great. It's a workout, totally. But that is the nature of our lineage. We're combining structure and space at the same time. We're combining step by step with no step. We're combining, you have to do this to learn this, to do this, to learn this. And there's also nothing to do, nothing to achieve. It's interesting, actually, but that's the full practice. None of you need to really do anything. You don't need to be here, but on the path, it really helps to be with others, to practice together, and for bodhisattva training in general, we need each other, we need annoying people. We need some annoying people, you know. I keep annoying people around as long as I can. Sometimes they get driven out, but you know, or leave themselves, but we keep them around as long as we can. So we combine those two aspects, right? We need to have annoying person and enlightened person at the same time. So maybe we have a little bit of time for questions, comments, and complaints before we do a meditation or a stretch. Do we have time? You can raise your hand. Oh, good. Dana's good. Yeah. What's the point of the emperor? We become enlightened first, so we can help others. You know, we have to practice that sometimes. You know, sometimes somebody will say, "You know, I really need you to take, you know, the car to Pavilions and wash it." Well, I've got to do my practice. Sometimes we have to say that. You know, and the person will say, "Well, isn't part of bodhisattva practice taking the car to Pavilions and getting it washed?" And yes, but sometimes we have to do the formal practice. See what I'm saying? Sometimes we do, like, well, you know, actually, I need to do my practice commitments, you know? I need to do some sitting practice. And the only time I can do the sitting practice, or the only time I can do this, is like right now, so I can't take the car to Pavilions and get it washed. See what I'm saying? Or someone's going to say, you know, like, isn't bodhisattva practice helping going to the hospital and visiting someone who's in the hospital? And you might go, well, that's really nice, but actually, I'm on retreat. Or, you know, that's really nice, but, you know, I've got to get this reading done for the foundations course, right? Sometimes we have to say that. Yeah, that's a good question. So actually holding that question, Roberta's asking, how do we know if we're saying, we're using a bodhisattva excuse, you know? So that's when we have what I call the four legs of the table. We compare it to, you know, scripture, logic, our own experience, and the teachings from our teacher. So we put those all together so we have a wisdom mind like that. You know, you always want to test your experience a little bit. That's the only way we gain the wisdom, is we kind of test a little bit. You know, you just don't bump into it and then, you know, you have to test it a little bit. That's the experimental part of Dharma. So just having the question is important. Is this kind of a self-serving spiritual and materialist thing to do? Or is this really beneficial? I wish you could say you always know and you're always certain. That would be a lie, right? You might say, well, gosh, you know what? I'm in retreat and I'm getting, you know, a message that this person needs me. Which is the right thing to do? In the real training is we have to struggle with it a little bit. You have to bounce it off things like that. And then we have to have the courage to work with the consequences, because there's no catechism. That's the training for real life. There's just the wisdom mind, and we're willing to work with what comes next. So we can't scroll up and go, okay, the Buddha would do this. You know, we have to test it, and then, you know, actually we just go with it. Bodhisattva practice does entail a lot of investigation and probably apologies. There's one bodhisattva that just went around apologizing all the time. Yeah, Andrew, yeah. Andrew's asking, how do we know when we're, well, my advice is only give 49%. In other words, never get out of balance too much. How do we know? We really have to do the formal practice to do that. Otherwise, it's kind of always a strategizing. So we literally have to do the real yoga. So, you know, just even body-wise, you notice, like, am I sitting like this or sitting like this? We have to do the inner work, so we feel that the energy moving through the channels and the chakras. We have to feel the vibrations. You know, you actually have to really tune in to your body-mind system. There's no way to figure out ahead of time, like 49% would mean, you know, going home at 8 o'clock rather than 8:30 or something. I mean, it is totally just like your physical balance. That's why, and Vajrayana, instead of seeing the body as a real problem, we see it as this wonderful instrument to give us feedback and to experience bliss. So we have to do these yoga practices so we really can tell, like, oh, that just feels off balance. It's totally an intuitive feeling sense that through developing, you know, the inner Vajra body and the different channels and the different chakras, we actually feel what it's like to be in balance and out of balance. We can say in general, this would probably lead us out of balance, right? It would probably lead us out of balance if we were just helping all the time and got zero sleep, right? That's probably, you know, okay. But it needs to be a felt sense, just like, you know, being in balance, just walking out of this room like that. So we have to do the intuitive practices, which entail, you know, working with our breath and working with sound and working with sensation, working directly with mind. We can't get away with that, with doing that, you know. But the 49% is the 49% of your capacity, right? So the 49%, if our capacity is just a little thimble, then that's what we have. But in bodhisattva practice, we're increasing our reservoir, right? That's the important thing. So if you just think, well, I just have a little teaspoon or a teacup, then yes, you should only give 49% of that. But at the same time, we're expanding it. So that's why one reason, like, Dalai means great ocean lama, so unlimited. So, you know, as great as an ocean, so a person with that capacity can give a lot. So we're increasing our capacity. But being honest about it, you know. So sometimes I joke, like, I'm teacup lama, you know, just a little bit. It's a felt sense. It's a felt sense. But we experiment. We go, well, that's, you know, I'm just getting cranky and tired doing this, so I need to investigate this. Or I still have energy to do this, so that's working. You know, so we test it. And we ask other people. We ask other people for feedback. Am I becoming, you know, overwhelmed? Am I becoming another codependent bodhisattva jerk? Or am I fun to be around, you know? Those people we know pretty well probably will be telling us already. Yeah. But you can tip over. This, you know, the thing is, you know, when I say don't give more than 49%, it's not that sometimes we're not really tipping over, and then we have practices to bring you back. You know, that's a big part of doing the Vajrasattva practice, right? Is learning purification practices. We've tipped over. We've really been a jerk. So we're repairing. So there's nothing that can't be repaired. There's nothing out of balance that can't be brought back into balance. That's good news, right? Hope so. Good news. You just can't fall off. See, that's the important part of Dharma. You know, a lot of times people, they see that their life is walking this razor's edge, you know? Like the little narrow path, right? So if you screw up, you know, that's it, right? So that's why we say Maha Great Jnana means you just can't fall off. Right? You can't you know, you can't totally go off. You know, you might drop down a little bit and then, you know, get brought back, you know, breathed back. But you just can't fall off the path, really. You can't. You really can't fundamentally screw up, because everything can be repaired and reconciled. That's the real Dharma good news, you know. No, it's hard to believe, right? But it's true. You can't fall off the path, really. Easy. Yeah, when you think, you know, when we're always measuring, like, oh, I missed one Sunday, or I didn't meditate for 2 days, so I'm done, you know, yeah. It's not like that, yeah. Then if it's a self-improvement project, like Susan was saying, then you feel that there are winners and losers, and you can fall off, but, you know. However, you can wander around a lot. I'm here. The Dharma, the teachers are here to save us time, right? That's the whole thing. So it is interdependence. We're all, you know, connected, but also the interdependence is dynamic, meaning it's has the nature of impermanence, right? So, you know, we come together. We're creating an environment so we can manifest pure land. We manifest helping the planet. Manifest Shambhala, but tick. I mean, we're time beings, right? Yeah. So, a real fundamental delusion from Buddhist point of view is that we have unlimited relative time. We don't. So that's why last words of the Buddha were, you know, all composite phenomena are impermanent. He didn't say. Relax. He said, you know, be tuned into your own wisdom mind, be a lamp unto yourself. It's amazing, right? You know, just. What would you say if somebody said, what's your final teaching? You know? Yeah, keep on trucking. Yeah, you know, like just keep going. Yeah. One more question, we'll take a short break. La la la. Comments are okay too. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's an okay comment. That's totally okay.
I've noticed yes. That my children are very helpful in telling me when I'm out of balance.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And when I met you for
easy. So take a short break. I'm just going to sit here, so if people want to come up and say hi, that's fine. And then I'm going to be a little bit here after the talk, too, just to say hi, you know, because I want people who I haven't met before at least to say hello. It's nice. So in the break, we'll just take a few minute break. You can talk or you know, check your iPhone, right? You know, it's like, so like Buddhists aren't Luddites, you know, we're trying to always stay on top of the technology. So at Serajay, they have like computers and everyone's trying to do things, you know, everyone's got their mobile phones, they call it mobile, and like that. So, you know, that's okay. So they're wonderful things like meditation apps. We probably need to do an app. I'm sure Dana will help me do that too, you know. You know, so, you know, like we bodhisattvas use cutting edge technology. We use the website, we use everything we can, right? So we're not, you know, we're not trying to pretend that we're back in pre-industrial India, right? It's okay. Isn't that nice to know? Yeah. I mean, it's not nice to talk on the cell phone while the lama's talking. You know, you shouldn't. You know, but but you know, I taught at Sac State, and you know, like every threw everyone out that's like texting during class. You know, it's not super polite, but sometimes people have emergencies, you know, so I get it. You know, it's just quiet, you know, like, yeah, talking would be annoying, but you know, someone's just kind of, you know, just texting, or it doesn't actually, I don't get bothered by that, you know. Likewise, you know, if kids show up and they're running around, kid noises, that doesn't bother. Talking out loud is hard. It's the hardest thing when you're meditating, is if there's a conversation going on in the other room, because naturally, you know, we're kind of attuned into human conversation. But if someone's, you know, on their, you know, so if kids show up and they're sitting here and, you know, they got their earbuds in, and that's fine. If you have to check your text, you know, to see, you know, that's fine. Okay, so let's take 5-10 minute break, and then we'll do a meditation. We just have a few minutes for meditation. Particularly in group meditation like this, you want to do something that's easy, right? Don't try to do something that's hard. So if you want to just meditate on mindfulness of breathing, that's fine. If you want to meditate on nature of mind, that's fine. If you want to just silently do mantra, that's fine. That can be really helpful, you know, just the Om Mani Padme Hum, Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, you know, something very simple that you're saying silently to yourself. Generally in silent meditation though, just a little decorum. So if you're doing mantra, and during silent meditation, you're not using your beads. If you're doing alone, because it actually makes a lot of noise. So the mala is generally like, if everyone's doing mantra, then you use your mala, or you're using mala at home. But if you're in like silent meditation like this, but you want to do mantra work, then you don't keep count. You don't have to use your mala. You just internally, you know, Om Mani Padme Hum, or Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, Om Tari, Tutari, Turi Sar, like that, right? That makes sense, right? Or just Om Ma Hum. Oh, question.
Yes. During mantras, I've been told different things about moving your mouth, maybe you can move your mouth, or just saying it and your mind stream. Is it okay just to say the mind is not?
Yes, yes. We should practice to that. You know, generally, it starts out, you need to hear the sound, you need to make the sound, but you want to bring it more internally. So, you know, we're saying it's a mind mantra, but it's still a sound mantra. Like, we can hear music without singing, right? You know, you can hear the sound without making the sound. That's a very important part of the practice, You know, I know Michael's gone into that, you know, at Kirtan, like to, even when the music stopped, then we still hear it with mind's eye. It's an essential part of developing the inner yoga practices. So, good question. Yeah. Too short or too long? So Vivo was like, well, how long should I practice? Okay. So generally doing long and short is the best, okay? So do some long meditations, whatever long means for you, 24 minutes, 48 minutes, 4 hours. And then short would be like six-session guru yoga, like 6 minutes, six times a day, like that, you know? So, like with everything, we need to do everything, but generally, you know, in busy lifestyle practice, you know, like Dujin Rinpoche, you say, just start off short, you know? Just do short style, like 6 minutes, you know? Alternate, like that, and then you kind of are constantly alternating, you know, practice and meditation, post-meditation, like that, right? You know, so Mahayana style is you kind of do long sitting and, you know, you kind of build up kind of reservoir style practice, right? Another style of practice is you're doing alternating like on off, right? You know, you're doing intense and then off like that, so that you lose track of whether you're in meditation or non-meditation. So we blend sutra and tantra practice in this tradition, but if you can do both, that's great. Although I'd advise actually, you know, if most of us could do like 6 minutes scattered throughout the day, right? So that can really be of benefit, you know, doing succession guru yoga, it's called, you know, that has its own specific practice where, of course, you see your lamas as the Buddha, but it entails doing bursts of meditation. But doing both is why we do retreats. So we're doing a retreat end of next month, long practice and then short practices. When I was studying with the Vidyadhara, you wouldn't know, you know, like you'd have these day-long meditations or datung month-long. You wouldn't know, like, would the meditation be 6 minutes long or 2 hours? You wouldn't know, you know. See, that's the real way. But honestly, when in a setting like this, when your teacher is present, you never do long meditations because the darshan with the teacher is the most important. You see what I'm saying? So people always wonder, like, but in the Hinayana practices, you know, you're going to do long meditations as a group meditation, but the more Vajrayana, you want to spend the most time with the teacher, right? So that's why we do it short. But I expect you to do the meditation at home too, right? That's easy. But if, you know, if you combine the both, these are good teachings you guys are getting today, by the way. Pay attention, okay. So if you practice long enough that you're kind of, you want to, long meditation means you practice until you feel like quitting or you've hit a roadblock and then you go a little further, okay? You feel like, this is enough, I can't stand this anymore, or, you know, da-da-da-da, or, you know, like that. Then, so you go a little bit longer, right? Mahasiddha practice is when you feel you've practiced and you're going, it's going great, then you stop. So a very famous text, Pato Rinpoche, is where, you know, the advanced yogi interrupts. He's talking on Garb Dorje's 3 points. You're interrupting bliss, no thought, and clarity all the time. Okay? Many people misunderstand this because they think, well, I'm practicing for bliss, no thought, and clarity, right? But with Dzogchen point of view, every time every time we're noticing, oh, now I have bliss, now I have clarity, now I have no thought, we need to interrupt that. Otherwise, you get attached to that, you see. So there's a continuous, like, not that we're against bliss, clarity, no thought, but we tend to form concept immediately around it. So, you know, when you're attached to the practice, when you think, oh, I want this to continue because I'm doing great, then you'd stop right away. Okay? Not like, oh, but you'd just stop, right? Take a little break, walk around, come back, because you're becoming attached to your experience, you know? You're thinking, oh, now I've achieved something, you know? But we combine both of those, right? Long, short. We're practicing a little bit. We're going, oh, I just want to quit. I hate this. Okay, and then you go a little further, right? But then when you think, oh, I'm great. I'm so close to being enlightened. You know, I just want this to continue. Then then you interrupt, right? But you can come back to it, but then do you interrupt. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's important. So we're always practicing unity of sutra and tantra. So we're going to do prayers. I'm going to hang out for a few minutes, say hi to people. Yes, thank you. And getting the high sign that we're starting a new group the end of this month on Tonglen. So I think everyone should be on the mailing list, and maybe we have some flyers. Yeah. Tonglen is a practice that, you know, Pema Chodron, the American teacher, she's popularized. So sometimes I call her Tonglen Rinpoche. Right? but also there's another, she presents one style of Tonglen. We're going to present more tantric style Tonglen. She presents Tonglen Mahayana style, which is really important. We're also going to do, you know, tantric style Tonglen. So I don't have time to talk about that now, but Friday 29th, right? Yeah, so inaugural class. So we'll get more information out about that. La la la. So let's end with prayers. Yep. Yeah.